I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London, darkness in my heart and in front of my eyes, Jules. I'm wearing this, I couldn't get a paper bag, so I'm wearing this.
This brown box over my head to symbolize the embarrassment of Italy being eliminated.
I wasn't sure you would turn up this morning.
No, we can
make fun of you. It's good.
Yeah, I got all philosophical after 2018, missing out on the World Cup, and then again missing out this
time too.
Two
in a row.
Obviously, we'll be talking about that on the show. Yeah. We've got the playoffs. We've got Gareth Bale's heroics.
Amazing.
We have Sweden beating the Czechs. We got Cristiano. Whoa, that was close at one point with Burak Yılmaz's penalty. But obviously, there's one place to start. Italy play Macedonia in Palermo. Italy, who had never lost a World Cup qualifier at home in the history of the universe.
59 games, is that right? Or something like
I don't even know. I can't count that high. And then what happens? They go, they batter. They have a ton of the ball. They take a million shots, 19 blocked shots.
Yeah, 32 19
of them blocked. It's pretty extraordinary. And the minute 92.
Well done for boycotting the World Cup in Qatar. I know that you didn't want to go as Italian.
We are making a political statement.
Well done. What happened? Okay. This is a game where we all knew Italy would have a lot of the ball. We knew that Ciro Immobile, and maybe that's why he got the armband as well, in the sense like, okay, this is your responsibility, you know, come and show the way and score the goals that will send us to the World Cup. Insigne and Berardi, the other two of that front three, that was always going to be key, because it was all about when or how Italy would score. And after that, once you score the first one, then the rest is easy, right? The thing is, the first one never came.
The first one never came. Probably should have come in the first half with Berardi.
What did he do? The shot was so soft.
Yeah. Look, I think you can add this to the long list of individual mistakes. And this is why Italy does not deserve to go to the World Cup. More than one thing can be true.
Yeah.
I believe Mancini's going in the right direction with his team. I think Italian football is going in the right direction broadly with the national team. There's so many other things that they can fix and do better. But the thing is, football's a low-scoring game. Yeah. And, you know, and we can't complain about this in UEFA. UEFA have 13 spots at the World Cup. There's only 55 teams in UEFA. And I'm being generous because I'm including San Marino and Andorra and those guys. Yeah? There's no excuse for not going to the World Cup. And the nice thing about European World Cup qualifying is that you get so many second chances, right? It's not like Africa where you win your group and then you're home and away and you're in or out, right? Yeah. Italy had those chances. They dominated Switzerland at home.
Yeah.
Jorginho misses a penalty. They dominate Switzerland away. Jorginho misses a penalty.
Yeah.
They dominate Bulgaria even more.
Yeah.
They give up that stupid equalizer when they just switch off defensively. Those are three things. And still they weren't out. Still they had this chance tonight. Still they had these opportunities on the night.
Yeah.
Still they switch off when Tchaikovsky's shooting on goal. Because you know what? If he doesn't make that shot, it goes into extra time. I still like Italy's chances in extra time or on penalties, right? I mean, there's only so many times you can stumble and screw things up.
Yeah.
And I think that is what's most frustrating.
Yeah, I completely.
Sorry, no, most frustrating is not going to the World Cup. That is the second
and,
most frustrating.
You know, the argument that says, oh, would you rather win the Euros and then not go to another World Cup? I would say, yes, England will take that, blah, blah. This is not the point.
Yeah, we're not England, We're not England.
And Italy should qualify to every World Cup and be in every competition to go and win it. Not just because you won the Euro, it's okay not to go to the World Cup 2 years later.
No.
This is, you know, Marco Verratti was 21 when he last played a World Cup game. He would be 33 for the next one if they qualify that. And Donnarumma is yet waiting, made his debut at 16, he would be 27 or something ridiculous before playing. I think it's a disaster. It's the right direction. I'll talk to you about Mancini coaching during the game because I really struggled.
We're going to get into that into more granular detail.
But I'm sorry.
And look, I think inevitably what happens here is you have the inquest, you have the root and branch reviews, you have, you know, burn it all down, start over again. Like I said, we're not in that situation. I don't think it's what grown-up teams do. I think fundamentally what you have is you have a lack of individual talent in key positions. I'm not having a go. And it's not like Insigne, Berardi, Immobile. These aren't terrible players, but they're not great players. And they're not great like some of the strikers we had. In 2006, when Italy won the World Cup, Italy's strikers, their names were Francesco Totti, Ale Del Piero, Pippo Inzaghi, Luca Toni, right?
Yeah.
This is completely different from these people. Gazzetta dello Sport wrote that Insigne is ready for Canada. No disrespect, MLS. You kind of have a point.
Yeah, but Berardi is having an amazing season in Serie A. 14 goals, 11 assists. This is a really good player in a good season.
He's a player who's 27 years old and still plays for Sassuolo. I mean, this is the reality. True. He's very good. But it's not like, you know, he's going to blossom into something.
Yeah,
no, this is what he is. He's a very good player. And the difference between an outstanding player and a very good player is that the outstanding player goes and breaks through more often, you know, against a very well-defended team. We need to give a shout-out to Macedonia, too.
Of course.
Because,
amazing.
You know, just for context, right? The talisman Goran Pandev retires.
Yeah.
LF Elmas, who arguably their best player, suspended for this game.
Yeah.
And they go out there. They had a simple game plan. They defended deep. They defended really well, putting bodies on the line. There was something Burnley-esque, and I say that in a good way, about it. And then they're rewarded with that little bit of luck that you always need at the end.
Tarkovsky played 4 years in Palermo. His son was born there, and then he came back and scored the winner.
And he is, and I think he's one of the few Macedonian players who had scored against Italy before as well. So, there's a bit of karma there as well.
Yeah.
Well done, but we're going to get into this. We're going to break this all down. When a team goes out, a team that's supposed to win and qualify relatively easily, you go back and you think of mistakes that were made, things that could have been done differently, players who were called up but who weren't called up. Well, first of all, for this specific game, let's leave out the mess before. I thought back, and you're no doubt going to point out more of Mancini's mistakes because you're very good at that. The one thing that got me was, you knew how Macedonia were going to play. They were going to defend deep and play on the counter. He went with that front three. He called up João Pedro because he said, I want to have more mobile people who will move around so that we can kind of move the defense around and create space and have Barella running in from midfield or whatever and create shots on goal. The alternative was to bring a big man. Probably me bringing a big man, I mean, would have been Scamacca, I assume.
Yeah.
A, he's not super experienced. He wasn't injured. He was in the stands.
He was not even on the bench.
No, he wasn't picked to be on the bench for the game.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm going to. Scamacca and Zaniolo, you know, he went for João Pedro on the bench, Politano for the one-on-ones. He chose that approach. I get the logic that if you just bring in the big tall dude and you start lumping balls to his head, you become predictable. But I do think that would have been, depending how the game went, I think that could 100%. Have been that could have been a plan B. That could have been something you turn to. And the other one, I go back to this. Again, we don't know how fit Zaniolo was or whatever, but a lot of times these games are decided by individuals.
Exactly.
And if it's about an individual taking somebody on, Berardi can do it, but not for 90 minutes and not that well, as we found out. A fresh guy to come, you know, a Zaniolo to come on to try to break something, to try to create havoc somehow. I think surely he would have had 20 minutes, half hour to do that.
I didn't understand the Zaniolo at all. Berardi needs to run at people to be able to dribble past and make something happen. Zaniolo can make something happen in very, very
tight space. Yes. And he has more of a physical presence as
completely.
Well.
Really? So that didn't make any sense. The João Pedro, as good as the season he's having in Serie A, good on him. He's a late developer, bloomer, whatever, great. Does that deserve a cap in such a big game? I don't think so. I would have called up Mario Balotelli every single day ahead of him.
But then you get the guy who's not mobile.
It doesn't matter.
The guy who's got issues.
And we go back to the Zaniolo point. I think that for a game like this, for the last 20 minutes, Balotelli on the pitch, in this like mindset, listen, we need a saviour. It's 0-0. Every shot is blocked. There's nothing. We just need a bit of inspiration. You know, go and do what you want. You won't have to defend. You won't have to trail back. You don't have to get the ball. And I think Balotelli would have been far better for that than anyone that Moncho brought on for the game.
Has Balotelli ever done something special or served up a special assist late in injury time? Maybe
with
at 93 minutes and 20 seconds?
With a blue shirt?
But to be fair, though, Roberto Mancini couldn't have known that about Balotelli.
Yeah, true.
Okay.
Yeah, true. No, but you see what I mean? The João Pedro, I see his number coming up on the board and I'm like, what? And also, João Pedro misses a chance, you know, right at the last second.
One of many who's missed chances,
but if I said to you before the game, okay, you will have one chance to take it to extra time, only one. It will be the 94th minute. Would you rather, and that's before the game, would you rather have Ciro Immobile being there for that chance even if his national team record is obviously not as good as the club record or the Lazio record, but still, Ciro, or a guy who is not even Italian, really, let's be honest here, who's having a really good season, but he's 30, he's never been in that situation before, never been involved, never even played in Europe. Who would you have picked to be where that ball landed to make it to 1-1 and take it to extra time?
Honestly, neither one. But I take your point.
Why would you take him out?
Because Immobile ran himself into the ground, because I think Immobile is, he's a confidence player. I mean, this is the way Mancini sees it. He's a confidence player. And when things don't go right with him, we saw this at the Euros as well, you often have to take him out. But yes, I think that would have been an obvious game for somebody else to come on to give you that dimension.
What, just before you go, what I didn't understand is...
I'm not going anywhere.
No, but before you go to something else. I understand the line, they say, like, there's no need at time to throw strikers and forwards on your pitch to try to win a game, because you can have six forwards on the pitch and you might still not score. However, and I know there was extra time looming in this game, but in a game like this, why taking off one of your front three forward to bring Pellegrini on?
Oh, I can explain that.
No, but at some point, play Immobile and João Pedro if you want, and two wingers, and do you see what I mean? Why?
So I think the reason
he almost looked like Mancini got starting to get really stressed out, thinking like, oh my god, we're not going to score, we're going to go to extra time. Let's bring Chiellini on. Why?
Okay, so Chiellini,
and then Chiellini, make those defensive subs. It didn't make any sense to me.
So Chiellini was a purely, I think, emotional choice, kind of like roll the dice, blah, blah, blah. He's only got half an hour.
That worked out well.
Try to lift him around. Well, it's not.
I know.
I'm happy to blame Chiellini for many things. I'm not blaming him for this.
No, but he's just come on, you know, maybe he's a player that's played the whole game. He comes out quicker on Tarkovsky. I don't know. Anyway.
The other one, the Pellegrini thing, I have no problem with whatsoever. Pellegrini is in really good form.
Yeah.
He's played wide before. You've got the free kick option. He's a guy who scores big goals. I would have
played him in midfield, not wide like that.
I mean, to me that's less of an issue. Look, there's things they could have done on the night, but the reality is, even with the chances they created on the night, those chances should have gone in.
Yeah.
But more broadly, Jules, if we wind the clock back a little bit, and I go back to something I said earlier, in the way this team was built over time, rather than the decisions that were made of the night, I don't see a massive problem other than those wasted opportunities. And you cannot go back and complain to them. You have to take those. I'm not going to put it all on Jorginho, but those are two missed penalties and the defensive
mistake.
That's true.
However, the football is not as good as it was a year ago. The way they play, the way they, you know, as a team, you know, that 4-3-3, I think, showed at times that other teams, opponents, have kind of worked out how to make sure that they used to play the best football, you know, leading to the Euros, and at the start of the Euros, this was the best footballing team in Europe, without a doubt. And then already we saw in the semi-final where Spain were very good. The final was different. It's a final. But certainly since the Euros, they haven't played as well as they used to.
No,
partly because Spinazzola hasn't been there. So, and against North Macedonia, they were far too narrow at times. Because if you play without your two starting fullbacks, it's not as easy.
I think there's also quite evidently a talent gap here, right? Florenzi. In the end, not necessarily. Obviously, Di Lorenzo was unavailable.
Yeah.
I think Di Lorenzo's a far better player than Florenzi. Florenzi, though, does give you more going forward. But you know, Florenzi, for me, should be second or even third choice at Milan. Yeah. For me, right?
I would take Calabria. I had him in Paris, so trust me, I know.
Exactly. Emerson is a guy who never played at Chelsea.
No.
Right. He's now in Peter Bosch purgatory, right?
Yeah,
in mid-table. Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean,
this
is the reality.
Yeah. You add Spinazzola and...
Center backs were fine. In fact, I think Bastoni was one of the few guys I would give a pass to. I do think Donnarumma... I expect Donnarumma to save that shot because of from so far away. That is the only thing I was... And I know it's difficult. You haven't faced the shot
he's
all
so
game,
big. Yeah, I know. But,
you know,
he's a few like that in
again,
Paris as well.
That's another one where maybe he could have done better. Maybe we're not having this conversation now. Right. Barella was terrible, but, you know... He's not a bad player.
No.
Jorginho was taken out of the game, and Jorginho's not on the level he was at.
No.
I also think that And again, you have to give credit Macedonia for this. They took Bardi and they basically said, yeah, you just sit on Jorginho.
But that's why I meant that it's predictable now the way they play.
But that's why he played Verratti with Jorginho. Yeah. Verratti had a monster game, and Verratti, I thought, was by so far good. Italy's best player. You know, the guy does everything but score. Mm. But again, the front three, you know, I'm sorry, Insigne,
yeah,
bye-bye, you know, Toronto, right? Immobile with his limitations. Sometimes superstars carry you. And right now, in this generation, in this group, you're very thin on the ground with superstars, especially, or difference makers, if we want to use that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to give Chiesa the superstar tag, but he is a difference maker.
He's not there much.
So they just don't have the depth that Spain or France or England
but
have.
You still should beat North Macedonia, even with the depth that you have right now, and Switzerland, right, and Bulgaria.
I agree with you. But the thing is, not having the depth is what changes your margin for error. Right.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And I think, I think that's what the big blow is.
I think the Euros showed, I mean, we said before the Euros that we didn't think they were really ready to win it. You know, when we previewed it, we said, okay, this comes maybe a little bit early for this team that we really loved at the time and were on that great run that they continued for a bit. But we said, okay, maybe the World Cup 2022 will be where the maturity and they arrive and they're amongst the favourite. They won the Euros as a cup team, like as a the team that you didn't really expect, that grew and grew and grew, got a bit lucky, semi-final, final, penalties each time, blah blah blah, they win it. But maybe they're still developing so much that although they should have qualified, they're just not ready yet for, you know, to be in that thing. I don't know. I can't work it out why it is.
Let me ask you this. Because this is one of the big debates about the sort of how you see football trending, and bearing in mind that, you know, Deschamps, of course, won the World Cup playing a certain way.
Yeah.
One of the things Mancini got praised for is that since arriving there, he kind of turned like 100 years of history on his head, and he said, no, winning football is about having the ball, it's about demanding the ball, it's about pressing high, it's about being courageous and taking risks. And that is something that Italian football historically has never done.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that really cost Italian football for a long time, because you get away with it when you have outstanding defenders and outstanding strikers who only need one chance, but you're not going to have that all the time. Now, and in that sense, I think Italy, for the approach, and it's not just Mancini, it's all the coaches that aren't, many of the younger coaches in Serie A, the way they play, it's much more attacking, more risk-taking. Now there's inevitably going to be a backlash with people saying, oh, but look, but before, when we were more conservative and more defensive, you know, we would qualify for things, which is kind of nonsense, because Ventura didn't qualify last time around, but still. Given that France definitely belong in the conservative defending counter camp, where do you stand? Is there some merit to it? Or is it something you can get away with if you're Deschamps because you've got Mbappe? But
yeah, I expect Deschamps to change a bit, to be fair. It's an interesting one. I mean, I guess you do what you have to win, whatever that is, but it's also fitted to the qualities of your players, right? So when Mancini and Italy were playing really expensive attacking football, pressing high, it's also because they felt, and they did, to be fair, had the player for that. You know, I think it's as much
argue they still do. They still have the midfielders for it. And they still have the strikers for it in terms of strikers willing to run around and expend and injury and whatever,
the intensity, for sure. I think it's as much as that than the mindset of your coach who said, like, you know what, I can have those incredibly talented technical players, I'm still going to play on the counter. But it's more tricky.
But it worked for France. Gareth Southgate thought it was going to work for England.
Deschamps had a bit of both, to be fair. And I think he chose what he was most comfortable with. And now we see a bit of an evolution where he's thinking a bit more like, okay, we're going to slightly play differently. It's a good question. I don't want Mancini to go to start with. I know he said last night after the game, you know, it's going to be difficult now. It's not the time to think about my future. I don't want him to go because I still think that he, as you said, they're going to the right direction. I don't think there's much needed to change to make it work again.
Just wait for better players.
Yeah, but I think collectively, you could almost make up for the lack of, like you said, match winner that you can have in terms of talent, individual talent. I just think it's such a huge shame, and I also think that you grow as a player and as a team when you go to World Cups. I know Italy, before not qualifying for the last two, had two terrible World Cup after 06 where you didn't even went through the group stages, you know, in 10 and 14. No, I'm not here to bring back memories, right. But, you know, so it's been a while now that you've been, you know, you and World Cups hasn't worked out. But I do think that you grow as a player by going through those experiences, whether they're good or bad. And I think it's a real shame for a big generation not to be able to. And we go back to Donnarumma and Verratti and players like that. Jorginho will probably never play in a World Cup now. You know, which is for him, you know, whether you like him or not, whether you think he's good or not, it's a real shame that you play for Italy and not even make to the World Cup once.
Yeah, no, I'm bored with that. It's funny, those stats, right? Like, when people bring this up, Italy didn't win a game in 2010, yeah. So I can... You can't... It's such a dumb way to look at it, whether for positive or for negative, yeah. Right? I can come back and say, oh, look, since 2002, Italy have lost, I think it's 2 World Cup games, and one of them was the one when Suarez was biting people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Sure. Like, oh, I because they weren't there. And that's going to hold until 2026. So... I think you have to look at trends over time, and you have to look at the performances in between at the Euros. I think there are still some structural problems. One of the big ones, and this is something the Federation's complained about, is that what clubs in Italy are doing, not just in Italy, but it's especially marked in Italy, is the equivalent of the under-21 side or under-23 side at each club. There's a developmental team, right? They're packing it full. They're taking 18-year-olds from other countries. And so it's a classic bottleneck issue, right? Which they've talked about in England and so on.
Yeah.
I've always been on the side that, like, if you're talking about national team success, you have to be really, really good. And so, you know, if I'm a super promising young player at Manchester City, let's say, just because they bring in 6 foreign dudes when I'm 18.
Yeah.
If I'm of the caliber to make a difference at the national team level, that's actually just going to make me better if those guys are good.
Yeah.
But what's your take on it?
I don't know.
Because in France, you don't have that problem. Because in France, what happens is very convenient because you produce so many players, then they all get bought and they all go abroad.
Yeah, but
and they free up spots for more young talent to go through.
Is there a problem with academies in Italian clubs?
I mean,
is there a problem with your formation, the way you form players, young players?
The players are definitely coming through. But the argument is more should come through and more should be ready to play at a younger age, because when they reach that we call it the Primavera level, the under-21 level, those teams are filled with foreign players, with young foreign players. You get cheaply. A lot of times there's some agent speculation or whatever. And so the guys don't get minutes.
Yeah.
I think
you know, something that England have changed, for example, with Brexit. There's a new rule. You can't sign as many young French 15-year-old or 16-year-old like Gael Kakuta to bring to your English clubs. I think this is something that you have to look into, though, to be fair.
But so first of all, if there's legal issues there, what I want to point out about England, though, is that this great generation of young English players, and I think we can both agree, they produce a ton of talent.
Yeah, yeah.
All these guys came through when that rule wasn't there.
True.
All these guys came through when English academies were filled with foreign players.
True, but they put the emphasis on we need to do better at bringing through those young players.
Everybody puts emphasis on. But what I'm saying is those young players, they faced much tougher competition to get playing time at youth level. And I think the result is Saka and Foden and all these guys today.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't quite know that, if we... You know, there's no foreigners that we're just playing amongst ourselves all the time, because then you get the guy who thinks he's
true.
A superstar and he's playing against the Muppet Show.
That's true.
So it can, I think it can work. It can work both ways.
Yeah, no, it is. But there's, you know, I think, like you said, Italy are going into the right direction with Mancini, but there's still a lot of work to be done to make sure that this disaster doesn't happen again. It can't happen again. And just think about the losses that it is for. I don't know, for your federation, for your league, in terms of sponsorship money that would have come in terms of TV rights that would have come in for that World Cup, for, you know, for your federation, for all the money that could have gone back to grassroots football, all of that. This is a disaster.
Do you know what they should do? Maybe they can, maybe sort of during the World Cup, since they'll have time on their hands, maybe they should all go in the bubble in Orlando. And that's an original idea. And play a little tournament there, no?
Who are you going to support? I mean, you might not have to say now because there's still plenty of time between now and the World Cup.
So,
Qatar, but
I have.
It's okay if you want to go for France. I welcome you in the family.
It's kind of like cheating, right? So normally, this is a good one. I mean, and this is going to be an ongoing thing. I'm willing to take suggestions, right? You look for other countries that you have ties to.
Yeah.
So in my case,
you lived in a lot of countries when you were younger. So
I did live in. Yeah. One obvious thing you can't do is I can't support another big team. I can't support another team that's won the World Cup, at least initially.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
I like, this is not, or that is a legitimate contender.
Yeah.
You know. So obviously you start with, you know, the team you would least want to support, and obviously it's Germany that you least want to support. No disrespect, but, you know, four World Cups, sorry, Germany. Sorry. I admire, but I can't.
Yeah.
And then you work backwards from that. I do have family ties to the United States.
Of course.
And to Scotland. I'm not sure Scotland will make it, but they're still in with a shot.
Yeah, of course.
The U.S., obviously, I think pretty safe they'll make it.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I used to live in Japan, so I'm definitely going to support Japan.
Yeah, me too, man. It's got those two goals.
I've been a Super Eagles fan just because I like the shirt since
And you're a big star over there to Nigeria.
Hello, Nigeria. Hello, yeah. Colin. It's going to be real tough for them as well, I think, to make it. But I am open to suggestions. And obviously, if Macedonia make it, I'm on board with Macedonia.
Macedonia, yeah.
All the way. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, enough Italy, and I mean it. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Portugal beat Turkey and will face North Macedonia on Tuesday night. Jules, that penalty missed by Burak Yilmaz weighs heavily.
Yeah, really. I mean, they started well. They played well, Otavio and Diogo Jota in the first half. He was really good on the front foot from Portugal. I was even kind of happy with Fernando Santos' team selection. The picks. I was
Come
like, what's
on, picking
going on?
Otavio, that's a big call.
I was like, what's going on, man? And then the second half was not as good. And to be fair, Turkey responded well, played well. It's a great goal by Burak Yilmaz. And then the penalty comes and you say, okay, this is where things maybe turn for Portugal. And Burak Yilmaz just smashes the ball. And you just think, like, why? Why did
What's he supposed to do? Place it? Because he's a big man. It doesn't matter.
You know, and after that, then obviously they scored a goal in garbage time. Cristiano could have scored as well. And Turkey, but I did think for all the good things or the better things that we saw, and it was an improved performance from what we saw from Portugal, there were still some like old bad habits. And of course, they were without three quarters of their starting defense. So it's not easy if you're Portugal, no Cancelo, no Diaz, no Pep. So it's not the same still.
I need to ask about Cristiano because last night on the show, they were saying Cristiano did his part in the first half, but sort of around the hour mark, they were saying maybe you tune a lot, you should take Cristiano off. And I just need to run this theory by you. And I explain to you that if you say this, you do not understand Fernando Santos, who is somebody who plays percentages, right? There is no way he's taking Cristiano off unless Cristiano wants to come
exactly.
off. You're 2-0 up.
Yeah.
If you take him off and Turkey come back into the game, like, you might as well move to Outer Mongolia because you're not moving back there. You know, you don't deserve Tahiti.
Yeah.
You get some other place.
Yeah.
And if you leave him on and you get knocked out, oh, well, you fought till the end with Cristiano.
Yeah.
Right? And if you leave him on and you win, everything's fine.
Yeah.
So this is the Fernando Santos playbook, right?
It is. It is his dilemma. If there is a dilemma, even you might not see it that way. At times, it looked like Cristiano was a bit of a passenger in that second half, definitely. But then he would have popped in somewhere and scored a winning goal had it been 2-2. So
Cristiano saved your backside so many times on set pieces and what dead balls that even if you know he's a bit of a passenger physically. Yeah,
exactly. Sweden also advanced, Gab, and will face Poland on Tuesday. They had to go into extra time to beat the Czech Republic in what was quite a boring game for most of it. But Czech Republic thought they scored first. Do you know why Michael Oliver disallowed that goal from Kuzma?
Yeah, well, so first off, congrats to Sweden.
I mean, we might get
to see Ibrahimovic play. Great goal, came late in the game.
Yeah.
But no, I don't understand.
Is there a foul in the build-up?
There's things you can call, not call. There's the Lindelof. Right? But
very strange.
This is, I mean, the commentator actually said, oh, it looks like Michael Oliver will be happy if, you know, VAR finds something. I just want an explanation. People make mistakes. Yeah. I'm surprised, you know, they didn't find, it's correct. There's no foul. To me, it seemed like 100%. Something Oliver should have looked at again.
Yeah.
And maybe even come out and explained afterwards.
Completely.
Gareth Bale steals a show and Wales are in the playoff final with a 2-1 win over Austria. Just, I am lost for words. I do not understand this. I don't understand how the guy can, just the way he can never play and then play and be such a difference maker. Just immediately get in the mindset.
And just for that, I think he deserves a lot of credit. Again, whether you like him or not, whether you think that what's happening to him at Real Madrid is deserved, not deserved, it's his fault, the club's fault, the media's fault, anything.
You know my views on that.
Yeah. But for him, to have played an hour against Villarreal and then a few minutes there and there, whatever it was against Villarreal, I think that's the last game he started for Real Madrid, to come in such a big game against a decent team. They're a good team, you know.
They are a good team.
They have a bad manager, Austria. We've said that before, and he should not even be in charge. But anyway, and to play like that, to be so clutch, so key for your country who's been waiting for a World Cup since 1958. And yeah, there's another game, of course, to be played and won if they want to go. But I just find it incredible. And really, I think this is a very, very special player. I think he was right in a way to respond to Marca calling him a parasite and everything. It might not just be Real Madrid's fault if he hasn't played. I just think that he's clearly still talented. And I don't know whose blame it is that he's in that situation with Real Madrid in Spain, but it should not be the way it is. That's the thing.
No, I agree. I'm just bowled over by the fitness side, by being mentally ready for this game when you don't play, by switching.
Incredible.
You hear so many like athletes, fitness experts. Oh, no, you need to get match fit. You need to get psychologically right. If you haven't played in 2 months, then you can't. No, this guy obviously proves them all wrong.
Yeah, clearly. Gab, Wales will have to wait until June to play their final. And since the Scotland v Ukraine game, the semi-final has been postponed, obviously. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it's an interesting one. I mean, we understand why Scotland v Ukraine was postponed, and that's fair enough. I'm slightly curious about why Wales and Austria didn't postpone their game so that you could do the whole little package, because this is something where, you know, Wales have played this game, then, you know, you got 3 months, maybe they'll play a friendly, I don't know, before the Scotland.
Yeah, you can have players get injured or something like that instead of playing back-to-back.
It would seem more logical to me, maybe you take your momentum with you and say, let's do this all in June. But, you know, I obviously didn't just come down to then. There's TV rights issues as well.
Yeah,
but I'm looking forward to that. I'll be neutral.
It should be good.
I'm free now. Details are scarce right now, but Chelsea will be allowed to sell tickets for their FA Cup semi-final against Crystal Palace and their Champions League quarterfinal with Real Madrid. They just won't be able to keep the funds. We won't have an empty stadium.
Yeah.
Sound fair to you, Jules?
So I think if the sanctions were for Roman Abramovich not to make any money through Chelsea or with Chelsea, whatever. So if the money doesn't go to Chelsea, and I'm not sure where it's going to go, to a charity, to a close fund that maybe then the new owner can have or whatever.
I think the suggestion's been charity, Ukraine charity.
I think Ukraine charity is perfect. Chelsea fans will be very happy to pay for the tickets, for that money to go and help the people of Ukraine. So I've got no problems at all, and I don't think anyone should have any problems with it anyway.
No, but, I mean, it makes a lot more sense than playing in an empty stadium.
Completely.
And
And by the way, they should do this because as the rules stand now for Chelsea's later Premier League games, they're in a situation where Chelsea season ticket holders can go, but away fans won't be able to go.
Yeah.
Which also makes no sense, isn't fair to other clubs.
Yeah, exactly. Sticking with Chelsea, Gab, as we record this, we're getting some clarity on the race on the bidders to buy the club. It looks like as if Todd Bailey's group and the consortium led by Sir Martin Broughton and Lord Sebastian Coe have made the shortlist. Others haven't, though.
Yeah, look, these are just things that we've heard, right?
Yeah.
From this could change. This is what's being reported, but those two are in the strongest position right now. Todd Bowley, of course, involved with the LA Dodgers and
yep.
that consortium with Jonathan Goldstein, who's a property developer here in London. The Martin Broughton Sebastian Coe consortium, apparently, reportedly, some of their backing comes from
South Korea, isn't it? Quite a lot of people from South Korea.
From what I'd heard, David Blitzer and Harris,
yeah,
of course,
well, yeah.
own a Palace. Big chunk of Crystal Palace, so presumably they'd have to sell that. It seems that Woody Johnson, former U.S. ambassador to London,
yeah,
owner of the New York Jets, is out. The Ricketts family. It's weird. Some people are reporting they're out. Some people are reporting they're still in. Obviously,
we saw big fans backlash against them.
Against them for some of their opinions that they'd stated in the past. Also, some of the political views of members of the Ricketts family. The Saudi bid supposedly out, but they're still willing to work with others. I don't think that should be allowed, period, given the Newcastle situation. And, of course, the Candyman.
The Candyman. What's happening with the Candyman?
Well, I'm told the Candyman can, but no confirmation there yet. So, like, it's like watching one of those races where you don't really know the people in the race.
Exactly.
You don't really know what opinion you should have about them, but but also a reminder to everybody, Roman Abramovich does not have to sell. If he doesn't get the bid he wants, he can sit on his backside.
Yeah.
He also has options. He could also he could try to block this legally as well.
Yeah.
If he feels he's not getting a fair deal. So I don't think this is going to be wrapped up quite as quickly.
No.
Ecuador lose to Paraguay 3-1, but they still qualify for the World
Cup. Well done to them.
Along with Uruguay, who beat Peru 1-0.
Yes.
But Jules, Peruvians are furious. The VAR did not intervene when Miguel Trauco's finish was pushed out on the line, maybe across the line, from Sergio Rochet in the Uruguayan goal. And there's no goal line technology in CONMEBOL.
Yeah, that's what we have to say. There's no... The watch doesn't beep if the ball has gone through the line. However, even if you don't have the goal line technology system, everybody, from me in front of my television, everybody in the stadium, I mean, you could see on the face of the Uruguayan players, they all know the ball is in. They all know. It's like, what's that United goalkeeper? Carroll. What's his first name?
Roy Carroll.
Yeah, you remember that?
It's
like, how? It's a Trauco's, it's a miscross, if you haven't seen it, from the left-hand side, and the ball goes up, and then like, Roger gets the ball, but then...
Falls backwards
almost, and backwards toward his own goal, but he's way in, like, really way in. And it's crazy, because now, obviously, Peru are still on this in fifth place to qualify for the playoffs or the World Cup playoffs, so they still might make it.
Well, Uruguay clinch because of that goal.
Exactly.
Right?
If it'd been a draw, Uruguay would not have been already through before the last game of the South American qualifier. It's an absolute mess. I don't think there's anything they can do now. They
said television pictures were inconclusive, and that's why VAR didn't intervene. But at the very least, show the referee. Right, whatever.
Come on. Russia have announced, Gab, their candidacy to host Euro 2028 and Euro 2032, which is a bit odd given that they are currently suspended from football, right?
They are suspended from playing. They're not suspended from making expression of interest. Yeah, no, this is exactly what they think. They're being mischievous and clever. Ha ha, we're trolling you. No, and look, I don't say this because they don't have a shot. Just everybody else who's been involved, they've already have bid committees and they're moving towards it. Their campaign. It's just, it's like they send an email saying like, oh, look,
hey,
we might pick
for it.
Yeah, exactly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jules, we have another Manchester United managerial shortlist. Yay! Funny enough, this is a lot like the old one that people have been reporting all along.
Yes.
Julian Lopetegui, Luis Enrique, Mauricio Pochettino, Erik ten Hag. I don't want to ask you about the candidates who've done this, but I want to ask you about our colleague Jan Åge Fjørtoft. He said that it's silly to have four candidates at this stage. It's nearly April. You should have one candidate, and if you don't go, you don't have him, you don't get him, move on to the next one. You should have clearer ideas at this stage.
Yeah. I mean, unless they're not sure...
How can you not be like, sure?
But maybe they like them all.
They sacked Solskjaer in November.
I know, but maybe they're thinking, you know what? Let's hear what they all have to say. And then we can decide. We have a vibe. You know, we can tell, oh, yeah, you know, he was charming. He seduced us. Oh, no, he was grumpy. He was badly dressed. You know, I won't name, but some people who went for the French job didn't get it because they were wearing jeans, for example.
Wow.
Which is, you know, so I don't know.
Sorry, Arsene.
I don't see it. Yeah, I don't know. Sticking with Man United, though, Bruno Fernandes has a contract through 2025, but it's reported that he would get a new one, a two-year extension until 2027, and more than doubling his wages as well. You don't like contract to, players to a certain age. What do you think of that one?
I think this is just stupid. There's no reason to do this. Now, if you want to give him more money, he was making 100 grand a week, because you give him more money. But even then, you don't know who the manager is. He's a number. You have him locked up, right?
Yeah. Already. Why?
Wait to see what the new man... Maybe the new manager doesn't play with a number 10. Maybe the new manager doesn't like Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
What, you're going to let Bruno Fernandes's presence dictate who you hire? This is so stupid. Why would you lock yourself into this? I'm hoping this isn't true. I'm hoping this is Bruno Fernandes's agents going yak, yak, yak. Because this would be a really, really, really dumb move from Fletcher and Murta. And I suppose this is one of the first Richard Arnold things.
Yeah,
there is no reason to do this.
Crazy.
None.
You're in a strong position. 2025 exactly. Is linked with you.
Well, you can never have enough United. So let's talk about them some more. Paul Pogba says that he's experienced depression at the club. Maybe some of his struggles have to do with not having a defined position, being shifted in different roles. Does this make sense, Jules?
Yeah, it is. I'm obviously completely biased. I've said that before through my relationship with him. But I think on the depression, he's right. At times, it's been very difficult for him with the criticism and all of that. I think he's right as well on the position. I know the national team is different to a club team, but with the national team, there's one position. He knows exactly what he has to do. He knows who he's playing next to, for example. And with United, it changes all the time. There's no clarity. Not enough. There hasn't been enough in the, 5 years or 6 years now that he's been at the club.
He's had different managers and stuff, been using different roles. I appreciated the fact that he opened up talking about depression. Not many top athletes do that openly.
Colombia still alive in CONMEBOL qualifying with a win over Bolivia, and it's thanks to a stunning goal, part of it, from Luis Diaz, the first one.
Luis Diaz is in fuego right now. When completely we talk about individuals who carry you, that is what Luis Diaz is doing. Good news for Liverpool down the stretch, because he'll be bouncing. Meanwhile, Jules, Vinicius scores his first goal for Brazil in a 4-0 thumping of Chile. First of many, yes?
Yeah, I think so. He took it really well. Just before the break, Neymar assist. After Neymar scored the first one on the
Neymar's
penalty.
Neymar still playing? No?
Still playing? I thought he played quite well.
Is his sister's birthday passed?
Yeah, it passed. Okay. You'd be disappointing to know you were not invited. But this was good. If you like your basketball like us, your NBA, they play small ball with Neymar as the force nine. And then you had Paqueta and Anthony and Vini. And it was cool. It was, and Fred and Casemiro, if you want to. It was good. Chile are Chile. They might not make it. Towards the end of that generation, of course, even if they had a couple of decent chances. But it was a good game. It was a really good game.
I think it's... this is the advantage of the qualifying format that you have in CONMEBOL, right? Advantage if you do it right.
Yeah.
You've got it locked up, so now I can go and I can try different things, right?
Yeah.
I can, you know, Antony, after getting the stupidest red card in the history of Ajax...
And a winning goal as well against...
And a winning goal, yeah. After you do, you know, you can say, hey... This isn't a must-win for me. I can bring you in I can see what happens. See you in the group. You know, he can. He's got more options to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because I think if you're Brazil, you have to start thinking ahead.
Yeah.
Beyond Chiche. Once he moves on.
Exactly. Marcelo Brozovic has extended his contract with Inter, doubling his wages to around 12 million euros a year, or about £200,000 a week. Gab, it's a deal through 2026 when he will be 34 years old. So we go back to my usual questions on the kind of deal. Are you happy or is it too late for that kind of deal?
So, look, remember what I said before about Bruno Fernandes?
Yeah.
Now, I love the Bras.
Yeah,
the Bras is very critical. Important. He's cool. He's got cool ink.
Yeah.
Whatever, right? And his contract was running down.
Yeah.
But you've doubled his salary. You've doubled his gross salary. And you're on the hook until 2026. Again, what kind of market was there out there for Marcelo Brozovic? For a guy who's pushing 30, right? Were you really that terrified that everything's going to collapse? Now you're stuck with a guy. And by the way, this money, he's going to make Manchester, he's going to make Bruno Fernandes type money. Which again, it's fine if you're Manchester United, you got a ton of money. I mean, and Bruno probably deserves it. But Brozovic isn't Bruno. Inter's revenues aren't United's revenues.
I thought Inter were done with those kind of contracts.
I would have thought so too. And like, I just look at this and, you know, but I think they're saying, oh, look, we're going to free up space when Vidal and
to be fair.
Why don't you use that money on buying young, good young players rather than pushing this and
maybe
on
maybe they
on.
Looked around and there was no one who could come in and do the job that he does so well.
I'll say this, though. It's 2022, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, right? I would go to Brozovic, say, Broz, we'll give you the money you want, but not for 4 years.
Yeah.
2 years. Two years plus an option. Whatever you want, right?
Yeah.
But seriously, like, honestly, who is coming for Brozovic?
I know.
I would love to know who's going to come and give Brozovic 200 grand a week. I'd love to know who they were competing against.
Yeah.
Mexico and the United States draw 0-0 at the Azteca. Jules, it sort of suits both teams, no? We still expect them in Qatar, right?
Yeah. And to be fair, I didn't watch, it was really late. I didn't watch the whole game.
It's kicked off at 2 a.m. London time.
Yeah, exactly. It looked like they were all happy with that kind of result, that he was not the most attacking game. Like, let's go and win this at all costs kind of thing. The U.S. had maybe the two biggest chances, but...
Yeah, the Pulisic chance is a bit...
But I think they have two more games in this side of the qualifiers to go. I think they'll be okay. Same with Canada. And I think it's between Costa Rica and Panama, for the remaining spots. So we will see. But yeah, it's one of those where no winners, no problem. Pedri has revealed that prior to joining Barcelona, he had a trial with Real Madrid, and who told him that he was not good enough. And they didn't keep him. I got to hurt now.
I love little Pedri from Tenerife with his little plastic bag. If we didn't know he's such a lovely guy, you would assume that he's kind of trolling, twisting the knife a little bit. But you know what? Stories like this are so common. We both know so many footballers who've been in the situation, who went for trials and were told you're too small, you're too slow, you're not gifted enough, and so on. This happens all the time. Growing up in Milan, Inter and Milan fans will know this about the day Inter Milan died, metaphorically, when they looked at a young Franco Baresi who wanted to join his big brother at Inter and had a trial and says, no, you're too small, you're too weak, you'll never amount to everything. And that was Franco Baresi, and that changed the course of history. But these stories are not that uncommon.
Yeah, they're all the time everywhere.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mesut Ozil has been suspended by Fenerbahce.
Oh, no.
Jules, this feels familiar.
I think this happened before, maybe another club, maybe
different manager,
country as well, or something. They haven't revealed what the problem was and why him and a teammate have been suspended and dropped from the first team squads. I mean, he's your star player, right? You remember the marquee signing that he was when he came over? This is the club that he supported, him and his family. So the whole fairy tale, it hasn't taken long for the fairy tale to end. I don't know what Mesut did, but you know, like you said, this, it can't be a surprise either, though.
It's also, as I said, it's also really dumb when the club suspend you without saying why, because you know other people are going to go and fill the gap and come up with things, reasons why, which may or may not be true.
That's true. Paulo Dybala was interrogated for 3 hours as the investigation into Juventus' false accounting continues. And Gab, this came a few days only after the fact that Juve told him that they were not going to extend his contract.
Yeah. I think it's just a weird coincidence.
It's a tough week, though.
But, you know, no, but I do wonder, if they had extended his contract, might Dybala have come up with some sort of injury excuse to delay his testimony or whatever?
Yeah.
Part of the allegation here is that there's private agreements and in place and so on. I don't know, to be honest. I wonder if there's something also a little bit performative here.
Yeah.
I don't know that you need to spend 3 hours with a 28-year-old footballer who is not a lawyer, is not an agent, and so
accountant.
On. Yeah. I mean, what is that an account? What questions are you going to ask him? But it wouldn't be the first
time. What do you think he's going to play next season? And what kind of market do you expect from him this summer?
I don't know. Obviously, there's a strong link to Inter, right? Because Inter, oh, look, you know, we can kind of get one over. And,
yeah,
you know,
Marotta.
Dybala, Lautaro, and Marotta's there, and so on. I think at the right number, Dybala is a special player and has a lot to give. Mm. But you have to factor in the risks that are involved with signing him. The fact that he's disappeared in big games, the fact that you know he's missed more than 50% of the starts the last 2.5 years, you have to factor that in. I don't know that his market abroad is as big as people suggest.
I don't think so.
So, you know, I know he was linked with Tottenham a few years ago.
Yeah, and PSG, you know, the ones that always come
not
back.
Not a Conte-type player at all, by the way. So, Atletico Madrid always in the mix.
Of course.
But, yeah, no. Ligue 1 have sold a 13% stake in their media rights business to CVC Capital.
Yeah.
Jules, we love to talk about private equity on this show, but it's hard not to. They're everywhere. They have stakes in La Liga, in Formula One, in rugby, and MotoGP. They nearly bought a stake in Serie A as well.
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. People tell me like, oh, wait and see, but it's good because that means more money for clubs. Yeah, I guess so. It's 1.5 billion that would then be shared and split between the clubs. So, for example, PSG wanted 30%. They will have 17%, which I think is 200 million. Then I think Monaco, Marseille and Lyon maybe 80 million. All the others will have 33, something like that. They've tried to share the pie. I don't know exactly what that means, how much control they will have. What, you know, can they decide things or not? It's a bit early, but I don't usually like things like that. I'm just putting it out there.
Effectively, for those who don't know, they're giving a lot of money up front. And in exchange, they get a cut of future revenue.
Yeah, TV rights and stuff.
They're in the minority, but they have what they call as negative control. So they're going to be able to veto certain things. They're going to be able to stand in the way if Ligue 1 does something silly. I think if there's something encouraging to others and neutrals and people who don't like a hypothetical breakaway European Super League, having a big boy like CVC with such a strong stake in two of Europe's big five leagues, to me suggests that that is another barrier to a European Super League. Because they have skin in the game, right?
They want
La Liga.
They might be involved in the Super League as well, CVC, and like, you know.
But they won't do it if it's going to hurt La Liga and their investment in Liga.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. Canada lose to Costa Rica at home 1-0, but Gab, they're going to be okay to qualify for the World Cup, right?
Yeah, I think so. They have a 3-point lead, 2 games to go. I mean, they would really have to screw the pooch here. This game influenced by the sending off just after half an hour. The guy got 2 yellow cards. I'm blanking on his name now. I think John Herdman, everybody's probably the most successful former women's football coach in the world.
Yeah, I think so.
In history.
On his way.
It's on his way.
Yeah.
Ada Hegerberg is back in international football for Norway after a 5-year hiatus. Jules, this is huge. It's huge for the reasons why she stepped away. It's huge for who she is and what she means.
Exactly, you're right. She stepped away because she felt the way the Norwegian national team at the time was too amateurish and that it didn't really answer the requirements of the top of the women's game, and that's why she took a step back. And it was for a long time. I think she expected it maybe not to last that long. For the reaction that I saw after she was just called back, she was very happy. She's the Ballon d'Or. She's one of the greatest women players of all time, and I think international football needed her in the fact, and I think she needed it as well. She just came back from a really bad injury too, so it's really good, I think, for everyone involved. And let's see now if she can take Norway to winning things as well, which would be incredible.
How old is she now?
26 or 27 maybe. So she missed a big chunk of her
of
best
her prime,
years.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And she still has great years ahead, but hey, certainly I think a big thing for her and for Norway.
So Norway could have the top men's player and the top women's player in a couple of years. Potentially.
They could, exactly, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Stay tuned there, Martin Ødegaard, because it's you we were talking
about. Of course. Saudi Arabia and Japan have qualified from Asia. Big win for Japan, 2-0 away to Australia, who now looked headed to the playoff, Mitoma. We mentioned before on the show, if you're a regular listener, with two goals there, late goals as well to win that.
Yeah, I think Australia kind of throwing it away, goalkeeping error as well on one of those goals. By the way, nothing straightforward for Australia. They have to. So they were third in their group.
Yeah.
They're going to face the third place team in the other group, which is going to be either Iraq or the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah.
And then the winner faces the qualifying intercontinental playoff from CONMEBOL, who, you know, we don't know who it's going to be. Could be Colombia, could be Chile, could be Peru.
Yeah.
So definitely
that's
uphill
tough.
For the Socceroos.
Yeah.
RMC, who I believe you work for occasionally, are reporting that Ashraf Hakimi is unhappy at Paris Saint-Germain. He would like to leave because the senior players, the Messis and Neymars, they don't like him. They don't talk to him.
Yeah. So
what's the problem here?
The whole thing. His best friend is Kylian Mbappe, right?
And now Kylian's leaving. Says,
exactly.
Take
so now
me
Ashraf
with
is thinking like, hang on a minute. If I lose Kiki, as he calls him, from the dressing room, who is my best pal, we're so close, we spend all our time together, you know, what do I've got left after that? And then he looks at the South Americans who are not really his pals, and he's thinking like, oh, that might be tough for me. I think...
Hang out with Verratti, man. He's everybody's friend,
he
the
is,
little fella.
He is, but... I think this is, I mean, they made this a big thing. I don't think it's that big. I don't think Ashraf Hakimi wants to leave the club, even if Kylian goes.
Why don't the South Americans like him? The guy's a native Spanish. He's a native Spanish speaker. He grew up in Madrid.
I know, yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure if they don't like him.
Wait,
really.
Could Real Madrid use a right back? You would think so.
Oh, yeah. I think Odrio Zola is coming back. Maybe they think he's better than Hakimi. You know?
Yeah, right.
The Bundesliga has ruled that Borussia Mönchengladbach 2-0 win away at Bochum will stand. Remember, Gab, the game was abandoned after the linesman was hit by a cup of beer thrown from the stand in that big derby. Of course, that makes sense to you, right?
Yeah, I don't even understand why this was a question, right?
So, well, in France, we replayed the game. Remember the Nice Marseille?
But it was stupid. It was Bochum who were at home, right?
Yeah.
So one of their guys throws the beer. You're losing 2-0 at home, right? One of your guys throws a beer, hits the linesman. Okay, there is a fair argument to be about like the... Because it looked like the assistant referee was fine to continue, but then the official referee, Schiedsrichter, decided to go and... No, Schiedsrichter means referee.
Yeah, referee. You know, I know
it's
that's not
the
name
of the referee.
I know.
Although that would be kind of cool, some sort of nominative determinism. Or anyway... I don't understand
the last 20 minutes of the game could have been played, for example. The game was stopped in the 70th.
So you need to be punished because you couldn't control your fans. You're losing 2-0 at home. What are you going to replay the next 20 minutes?
No, on the neutral venue.
Replay the last 20 minutes so that then you can be slapped with a further penalty?
Okay, if Gladbach go down on goal difference by one goal, which they could have... You know, got over. They played the last 20 minutes and scored three or two.
Gladbach aren't going down.
No,
don't worry about it. By the way,
this is fine.
Made history. Both managers out through COVID.
Yeah. Sure.
Christian Eriksen is back with the Denmark squad, and Joel, just seeing the pictures of
it's
him walking
amazing.
Around, embracing Schmeichel, it's just hard not to get emotional.
It is amazing. I mean, emotional in the Christian Eriksen sense of it, obviously, as you could see on his face, it looked like if it was just a normal day, like exactly like he did when he signed with Brentford or when he came back on the pitch. But you know that inside and for his family and everything, it's an amazing moment. They played the Netherlands and Serbia in the two friendlies, and he said he's ready to go, and you would think that he will have some game time in them, probably not the whole 118 minutes, but imagine just the reception of the fans from you know, whatever home and away and opposition team or his home team. the reception is going to be just a very, very special moment. Sergio Aguero, in an interview on Twitch, said that everybody in English media, from newspapers to radio to TV, are Manchester United fans. Gab, you've worked here a long time. Does that ring true to you?
No, and I don't know. I mean, I actually...
Why is he even bothering?
Obviously, look, Manchester United are historically a bigger club than Manchester City,
yeah.
And there are more Manchester United fans in existence than there are Manchester City fans. I think that's not an insult. That's just a fact, Sergio.
Yeah.
It's also true that among pundits who go on television, Mourinho's referenced this too, there aren't very many from Manchester City. Which is maybe why Mika Richards is on television 24/7,
yeah. Right?
Certainly not English-speaking ones, because others, like Aguero, for example, they're English, not so good after a decade in this country. But in the media, I can tell you, we have a lot here at ESPN of Manchester United fans.
Yeah, we do.
Too many, in my opinion. I'd eliminate some of them. But globally, no, that's not the case. You talk to most people, there's a ton of Liverpool fans in the media.
They
there's
are.
A ton of West Ham fans, people like that.
Arsenal as well.
Arsenal, very many. I don't think United are overrepresented in the media at all. People just talk about it a lot because it's a big club. But certainly, I mean, that's just my view. Anyway, Sergio. Right, that brings us to an end of a painful episode of the Gab and Joel Show, but we're going to be back on Monday. There's going to be lots to talk about. We're going to preview the playoff finals.
Of course.
Italy won't be playing in. Also, CONMEBOL, African qualifying.
Yeah.
Ton of stuff going on. Join us then. And until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.